10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Sorry about that, folks. I'm really getting sick and tired of that kind of stuff. People want to boot me offline because they don't like what I'm talking about. That's all right. I'm going to get it out. I will get the diagrams to each and every one of you out there so that you can at least make an attempt to build the device that I'm talking about. But in the meantime, how you doing there, Thomas?
Not bad. So,
man,
we'll be doing better if we can keep the radio, the show going.
Yeah, well, just rest assured that if it goes down, I'll fire it back up. Might be a couple minute delay in there. It really makes me mad because it chops my pod in half. But, you know, hey, where there's a will, there's a way. I'll splice it back together or just put all sections up there so you can hear before and after the crash. But, you know what, for those guys out there that don't like the idea of me talking about certain things, you might as well just give it up, because unless you come over and whack me, then you just, you ain't gonna get it, because I'm not gonna stop. That's all there is to it. But anyway, who all did we have in here?
Well, we have Midco.
Midco, yeah. How's it going, brother?
Everything's okay.
That didn't sound too reassuring. You sure everything's all right there?
In the most part.
Kind of discouraged about things, eh?
Yeah.
Well, I hope things get better for you. Maybe I can put some things in your mind to think about. Anyway, like I was trying to say before, I so rudely got interrupted by the whoever it was that decides they want to boot me off of my own radio show every time I turn around. there's a few small channels out there on YouTube that should get more recognition, and I'm trying to bring these guys on board to our dream team, so to speak, the thinking crowd, you know, people that think outside the box. But I've seen Ryan and a few other people do a Corona Motor. Are you familiar with those, anybody?
Mm-hmm.
Well, essentially,
those electrostatic motors.
Yeah. They'll put them on top of Tesla coils, and they can actually get, it's really cool to watch, too. But one specific video in particular, a guy was using, and I'm trying to get him on the show, but he was using neon bulbs and wires, one facing in the opposite direction, straight across from each other, and he would use a Slayer exciter to ignite a Tesla coil, but this Corona motor was on the top of the deal, and as he fired up the Slayer exciter, you could see that the thing would start to spin, and he was getting some really serious RPMs out of there as compared to what you'd see like on a atmospheric motor. Really impressive stuff. And while I had that in my mind and a few other things like the atmospheric motor and different technologies that I've been working on myself, some high voltage ideas, there's a permanent magnet, they call it a stator motor. They're in front load washers and dryers, and instead of having to have a transmission, you have this stator motor inside there that actually drives it. Some people call them direct drive motors, some people call them smart drive or whatever, but you can find them out there on eBay once in a while if you look for them hard enough. I actually got a picture somewhere on the website of one of these motors, and if I'll go back and double check, and if I don't, I will put another picture up there so you can see what I'm talking about. But essentially, they're stator motors. And I watched another video of a guy on another small channel that was using these stator motors. And he would he hooked it up to a gasoline engine, and he had this thing spun up to speed, and you wouldn't believe the arcs that was coming off that thing. I mean, these were high voltage set your house on fire type arcs. And so I knew when I saw that those things would have an amazing potential to seriously create some serious energy. And using that technology there in conjunction with what we've been talking about and some of the plasma technology that I'm talking about, and then even going back as far as the 1800s using a similar version of the mercury arc rectifier, which I don't want to go to that extreme to actually, I would love to have one of those mercury arc rectifiers in my lab to run tests with, but we can actually build one with just straight argon gas in there for safety purposes, and there's your you can change that high voltage AC into high voltage DC and be able to use it as on-demand real-time current. So what do you guys got any thoughts on that?
I was just looking up on what you said about the stator motor. So
yeah, okay. If you type in, there's several brands of washing machines that have them stator motors in there. I can't even remember right at the moment. Look on either the Mad Science podcast page or the Mad Science page on Shaziz Radio. There should be a picture of one in there. And if not, then I will send you a picture. But essentially, it's like probably maybe 12 to 24 in diameter, and has magnets already inside of it. It's just an AC electric motor, but they're stout enough to run a washing machine. So that has to tell you something.
Mm-hmm. That's not an induction, a standard induction motor though, where the core is actually just leaflets of steel sandwiched together.
No, they're actually like three phase. They have like three separate windings on them, and the way that they're designed is like a stator in one of those little brushless motors almost.
Hmm. Okay. I see some stuff that almost looks like a UFO on here. So.
Well, let me look through my pictures. And I'll see if I can slide one over there into Skype, if I can do that. And
that's primarily what I'm seeing on there. They do. You get that link?
No, I'm afraid to touch on any links right at the moment. Anyway, they're in direct drive motor washing machines and dryers. Essentially, they're like front load machines, and there's no transmission in the machine. It's just an electric motor, three phase, and they're actually plastic casings on them, but the with exception of the actual stator itself. Doggone it, I know there's one. Check on the Mad Science Pod page and see if there's a picture of one.
I don't know. I mean, I might have it right there, the link that I sent. So it's a bunch of coils on coil windings that are radiating out.
I'll go ahead and risk clicking the link.
Probably 36, 37 coils, and then it looks like there's a thin arc of magnets running all the way around.
Yeah, that's it. That's what they look like, just like that.
Okay.
Yeah, and these things are capable of producing some serious high voltage when you use them as generators. They've already got magnets in them already. So right off the store shelf, there you don't have to modify them, but other people have modified them to where they put them all into, you know, instead of being three phase to a single phase, they'd wind them all in series with each other and, you know, change it up a bit. But if you could throw that link into the chat room, that'd be cool for everybody else out there. Anyway, if you could picture 10 of those on a single shaft, and in between each one of those would be an aluminum disc that had the fluorescent bulb starters that I use in my experiments. I actually went out and bought a bunch of fluorescent bulb starters so that I could try to build a miniature prototype and actually do a YouTube video of it. But when on the each side of this thing would be separate rails for a spark gap, because there wouldn't be no direct connection to these actual generators. It would just be arcing across to these rails. And then down at the end of that would be where you would connect your either plasma reactor or mercury arc reactor, or, you know, just a argon-filled tube with anodes and cathodes in there that you could use to rectify this high voltage that's coming in. And then on the opposite side, you would have two spark gaps that would arc across to capacitor banks and charge those capacitor banks real time for, you know, DC voltage real time. What do you think?
So what voltage are they producing exactly?
Well, I don't know what the measurements on the voltage. All I can tell you is from all the things that I've watched from the different videos of people messing around with these things. And I think, what is that guy's YouTube? He's always tearing stuff apart. Doggone it. I hate it when I'm going to make some notes. Anyway, when they spin these things up with either electric motors or gasoline motors, the arcs that's coming off there is a really heavy kind of orangish yellow arc. It's not just a spark like a Wim's Hurst or a Van de Graaff generator. It's not just a little spark. We're talking about a quarter inch.
Like a microelectronic transformer.
Yeah. And you know, so that tells me when I see something that's that powerful of a arc coming off there, there's a lot of voltage to it. And we're not looking for current and amps in this particular device. All we're looking for is the corona effect, you know, like you see off the top of a Tesla coil, you know, the lightning bolts and the blue cloud around it and all that kind of stuff. And so when this corona gets built up just like being around a normal Tesla coil, and I'm talking about adding like anywhere from 4 to 5 separate technologies into this one particular device. And so when these things are spun up, I'm going to have to draw a picture, but I'm trying to explain this as best I can. Imagine a horizontal rod that has an aluminum disc with on the aluminum disc has the glass argon filled bulb starters. At one end of the bulb starter is actually connected to the disc, and the other one is going to act as a brush to shoot the energy off. But then the next one over would be one of these stator motors for the high voltage, and as this thing is spinning, when the stator motor is arcing across to each one of the rails, one on each side, and are surrounding the entire deal, would be the equivalence of a secondary on the Tesla coil all the way around in a complete circle all the way around this entire device. So when it's arcing across to that rail, it will be energizing those coils, which in turn would help energize the argon inside these tubes at the same time, and sending yet even more energy back into those coils when each one of these argon filled tubes arcs across to that rail again. And the faster you got this thing going, obviously the more corona you're going to build up, and the more I got this really big bulb that I put a video on my YouTube channel. I can't remember what I called it, something like large bulb or big bulb or something like that. Anyway, when you fire this thing up with a 20 kilovolt oil burner igniter, you can put your hand probably about 3 inches away from that thing, and as you start moving it in, you could literally feel pressure build up on that bulb before it finally, you know, you get close and you can actually feel the actual static charge and all that kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying? I'm sure Ryan knows exactly what I'm talking about, but he's not on here today. But anyway, you can actually feel that pressure. I mean, physically, with your hand, you can feel the pressure in between your hand and that bulb. And so when I saw these corona motors that they've been doing out there using pretty much the similar technology, I mean, it hit me like a ton of bricks. When you got this thing fired up, you could literally get this, I can't go into saying perpetual motion, but you could literally get this thing to put enough juice back in itself that it would run for a long time after after you shut the actual initial power down. Does any of that make any sense to you?
I'm seeing some of it, but some of the design, but I'm not seeing what you were seeing there. So.
Well,
the only thing to do with it, I guess, at this point is just to, you know, put the diagram together and get busy building one and see if it works, you know. I was actually talking to Kent the other night, and, you know, we were listening. Have you listened to the sounds from the Earth, the electromagnetic waves that they basically are posting on the, like, NASA page and whatnot, and all the different, you know, the spectrums that you can hear coming from, like, other
other planets?
No, I haven't.
Well, when I heard that, the first thing that came to my mind, because they're basically recording the EM field that the Earth is putting out, and that EM field, most of it is because of the sun basically beating it constantly with the solar wind, right? The sounds kind of fluctuate quite a bit. So I'm guessing, you know, I mean, I got to thinking about it more, and it's just like the Earth is actually a bunch of big rock rafts floating around on a sea of magma. So these frequencies that we keep talking about, you know, being locked in place, I don't think they're probably as locked in place as everybody thinks they are.
Yeah, the rock is changing, they change too. Yeah.
Right, so my thought for a solution for that, because, you know, that's essentially what you're looking at doing with the Tesla coil, is you're sending a power into your Tesla coil in a synchronicity with the pulses that are coming from the Earth, and you basically get, you know, extra power out of it because of what's coming from the Earth. But if you're doing that in between the pulses that the Earth is putting out, you're going to end up with a lot of wasted energy trying to capture that one pulse, say in 1,000 or 100 or even in 50.
Oh, I agree.
So, I mean, so what we need is like a little mini one that's running.
You can change the frequency.
Well, no, we not to change the frequency. We need a little mini one that doesn't take much power to run, and run something insanely high through it, like a gigahertz rating or a terahertz rating through it, and then run the output of that through a spectrum analyzer, and have the spectrum analyzer basically hooked up to a computer, so it's looking for the peaks, the really tall spikes.
Yeah,
and then that computer adjusts with like CNC equipment or something, mechanically adjusts the large Tesla coil so that it's only running on the frequency where the peaks are coming off, and that way you can keep it, you can keep it in tune with whatever energy is coming off of the Earth on a consistent basis, so that every time you pulse it, you're getting more power back than you put into it.
Yeah,
because you're actually pulling power from the Earth.
You could punch it up every time you saw the peak of that spike at the same time. You know, hit it up and time it out to where it would do the same thing each time.
Well, and if this is ran long enough, I'm sure that the right software could be ran to actually predict how the frequencies are going to change, too.
Well, this particular device that I'm talking about is probably more of a mechanical than it is as far as the Tesla's technology, but it could be incorporated, to do the same exact thing that Tesla does with the, how you got the primary and the secondary, and the secondary is connected to the ground. And so if you grounded the secondaries on this particular device, you could get an extra boost to this machine that once it was fired up, man, I see all kinds of amazing potentials with it. I wish I had a link to it. I can't risk going on my YouTube right at the moment because I don't want to crash out the show again. But there's a video that this guy I'm trying to get on the onto the show. He put out the one that I told you that he was using a neon bulbs. He had two neon bulbs. And if you could visualize it as a propeller, like an airplane propeller, halfway in between the propeller, it had neon bulbs in there. You know, one wire was connected to one side, and the opposite wire was connected to the output side, which would be a couple wires that were bent over to face in the opposite direction on each side of the propeller. And when he fired up the Slayer exciter, you could not only see the neon glowing, but you could also see the literal corona spinning around in a circle, and it literally looked like a UFO spinning around in a circle. That's how amazing this thing was. I had sent a link to Cultus. I wished he was on here because I'm sure he could track down that link to that video that I was talking about. But this is pretty much the same kind of idea that I'm talking about as far as this particular device. And then I also thought about the, there's certain flywheels that use simply weight alone, and to help to keep the motion going. Once you get it up to speed, the weight of the flywheel keeps it spinning, and after a certain point, then you don't have to use as much energy to keep it going. And,
right. Yeah, I was going to say, that's a mechanical battery effect that Mark Danzy was talking about whenever he goes in to debunk these QEGs and other devices. Or I should say not debunk, but, you know, he goes to investigate them and, you know, in order to basically ensure that he knows it works. There are, like, a series of things that he looks for that have to be eliminated before he can, you know, choose whether there's actually power coming out of it. One is, you know, the output measurement versus the input measurement and measuring it correctly,
yeah.
Which a lot of these people, like he said in his show, 90% of these people that he's talked to, or, you know, a larger percentage than, you know, than people who are actually, than the other type of people, the majority of these people, it's not them trying to do anything nefarious, it's just, you know, literally they don't know how to measure their equipment right. So he gets there and measures it, and it turns out that it's not what they claimed because, you know, they just didn't know how to measure things.
Well, so. And I want to put my ideas under scrutiny and all the measurements possible. You know, on the mathematics scale, I'm pretty much worthless on that side of the deal. However, on the mechanical issues, I can literally see anything from the internal combustion engine to electric motor, exactly how it's functioning, and explain it in graphic detail. But this particular device, when I was talking about using the flywheels with a weighted effect, I was talking about like taking on each separate flywheel, having just a single weight on there, on like the first one would be on the top and then a few degrees off on the next one all the way around until you come back around on the opposite side, so that whenever you got this thing speed up to speed, the centrifugal force would help it spin around faster. You see what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
So you would actually get a little bit of benefit from gravity itself once you got it up to speed. And as the high voltage arc was going across there and actually creating the coronal field that you would get off the what would be the secondaries on a Tesla coil, and they're completely surrounding it. In the center, when all those fields are coupling in the center, you're going to have a massive amount of energy that you have access to. And that's a lot of pressure, like that big bulb that I was talking about. And so that would give you an extra boost on your corona motor when that thing started to spin. And it probably looked pretty doggone cool as well. You know, I'm going to have to jump on YouTube and see if I can find that doggone video that I'm talking about. The guy, I think he's only got anywhere from 60 to 100 subscribers, but he should have hundreds of thousands of subscribers because the work that he's doing is really impressive. And he did this with a Slayer exciter. And so, you know, everybody who's done any work with the Slayer exciters know that, you know, you don't need a whole lot of energy to actually run that little circuit. You know what I'm
right.
saying?
Right, yeah, you can run a fluorescent bulb with just like a AA battery.
Yeah, so, you know, with that said, building a scaled-down model would be simple. I think the greatest expense in the whole deal would be the aluminum disc if we had to actually go have somebody cut them out, you know, and the bearings themselves. Everything needs to be super precision, like the atmospheric motor that they print out on those... on those 3D printers, like Cultus has, you know, the atmospheric motor.
Well, I
would
say they're not quite as precise as you think. They actually design those so that they have adjustability. That way they can, once they get it put together, they can adjust it down to get the precision they need out of them.
Okay, well, either way, if we have a horizontal shaft in there, we need to ensure that those bearings are at least tight enough to where they're not wobbling and they spin freely, you know, real easy.
Right. Well, and the solution to that is a really, really simple fix. You don't have to have ultra expensive, like, you know, maybe some needle bearings or something like that to get what you're needing there. If you put several bearings in each section, and the thing that the bearings are mounted in have a little hole drilled in from the side of the bearing, you can put a set screw in there and push each of the bearings in a different direction. The best solution would be to basically use three. so that you're pushing in three different directions, so that the bearings are pressed tight from each of a different angle, at like a triangle, like an equilateral triangle. That way, there's no chance it'll wiggle at all, and you just adjust the amount of pressure to determine how much resistance it has.
Well,
if you just push it until it's not wiggling, and don't push it any harder, then it'll spin freely, but it won't move at all in any direction.
That's a brilliant idea. I like that. But if I believe that we've got enough people right now, between all these people that I've talked about and people that is doing our mad science with us and all, I call it the dream team because it's brilliant minds from everywhere. But I believe we have enough people right now to literally create a device that can be proven, within a month. It's that simple. I mean, it could either be proven or disproven. I'm just saying a month because, it kind of sometimes takes us a while to get together, because we're all out doing our research and all that kind of stuff. But I honestly believe that this thing will function just the way that I'm talking about. I've seen I've seen a lot of Corona motors before that people have done, and they don't seem to be going really fast. They are moving, and then you have the people that are using caps to make ion motors, and you'll sit there and watch them spinning around, every time the cap discharges and stuff. And so, you've actually got work coming out of some high voltage going on there. And when I saw this one particular video, the one that I was telling you about with the neon bulbs in there, he was getting some serious RPMs, and it wasn't slowing down. And I was like, that is impressive. I mean, that's the kind of stuff I like to see. And not to mention, it looked cool while he was doing it, because literally you could see the neon bulbs would actually create a pattern, a light pattern as they're spinning around, and the corona itself from the
tracers.
Yeah. I mean, it was really cool. And so I'll have to, after we get off the show or whatever, I'll have to go ahead and try to pop up YouTube and find that doggone video and send everybody a link to it. I could probably go back in my deal on Skype here and catch the link from Cultus. But either way, using multiple technologies, that's the key that I've been talking about all along, because a lot of these different devices out there, they've all got something to them, But there's certain anomalies. Oh, crud, there's three links here, man. One, I'm going to go ahead and just send all the three of these links over there, but not all of them's the one that I'm looking for. I think it's on the bottom.
Let's see, I see Simply Steve came in to the chat room.
Cool. Maybe he'll want to join
in.
He's
missing P there, though. It says Simly Steve.
All right, I'm gonna paste these links in, and I'm not sure which one's which. There, I sent Cultus. I think the top video is not the one, but I think it's one of the bottom two. Did that go in there?
Which one? I see you typing in Skype right now, but I don't see anything over in the on your website's chat.
No, I sent it in Skype.
Oh. Hold on.
I think it's the bottom link, one of the bottom two links. Doggone.
I don't see nothing in the Knights of the Round Table room.
No, we're on the one we're on right now.
Oh, he just now can't pop in.
All right, well, try the one of the bottom two links. I think both of the bottom two links are related.
Okay, let me see here. It's probably gonna. I'm probably gonna kind of cut out a little bit, because when I do that, my internet connection is not very fast. So.
Well, either way, I think that these are some really, really amazing videos. When you see the one with the neon bulbs in there, I mean, that thing is scooting. It's doing really well. And so combining all these separate technologies, everything from the atmospheric motor to plasma technology to the mercury arc rectifier, the stator motor, and the Wimshurst and Van de Graaff, all these things could be combined in conjunction with one another to literally raise the voltage up to a ludicrous amount to where you're getting some serious ozone going on. And actually using the nanotechnology that I've been talking to Vincent about here recently about, and I think that I got the entire machine in my head, and I believe 100% that it'll work.
I saw some. Son Ryan was showing me something where basically it had something. He had something like that spinning around, but it didn't have the all the breakout off the end of it. So I guess he tuned it down to where it wasn't having so much breakout. It was just enough to basically get it spinning around, whipping around. So
yeah, in our particular case for the device that I'm talking about, we want that breakout. We want that breakout because that energy that's released off the tips of those as it's spinning around not only is creating pressure, but it's also helping to energize the argon gas in the disc as well. And the reason why I talked about using aluminum disc is because aluminum is a great material for picking up radiant energy. And so using that radiant energy to actually help charge that deal up, if you can visualize this, when the stator motors are arcing across, energizing the coils that are actually creating the first field that's going on, that energy will then transfer back into the aluminum disc itself, which will in turn charge up the argon inside each of those tubes. There'll be multiples of these around there with the propellers on the ends that are kind of slightly bent that are working like the motor that you see in that video. And so The more this thing runs, the more corona that's built up, it will literally help assist itself to some point. I honestly believe that you could literally have, if you had some sort of fast way to decouple an electric motor, once you spun this thing up to charge and you got those arcs going, there's not going to be any back EMF that's going to slow down that stator motor because you're not directly connected to it. You're actually letting it arc across to a spark gap to a rail where all 10 of these stator motors are also arcing across. And they're arcing across, one right after another hitting this rail, which in turn is all the coils that are actually surrounding the rails will be energizing those, what would be the secondary off of a Tesla coil, and helping charge that plasma up at the same time. So you would be getting a massive corona effect in the center of this thing that would be helping build more pressure up for this thing to spin. There would almost be a vortex effect down the center of this thing because with all these coils rounded this entire setup, all these fields are going to want to couple with each other, you know?
Yeah.
And so they would be helping even more energize each and every one of these discs.
I'm posting that.
Did you find the one with the neon bulbs in it?
Yeah, I posted a link that actually it suggested off of that very last link that you sent there. The neon bulbs were cool, but they actually have somebody that did two of them without bulbs on them. They just used the wire.
Yeah.
And had them spinning in opposite directions because of the direction that the wire was bent.
Yeah.
So.
But either way, you can see in those videos they're getting some pretty serious RPMs compared to the old style ones that they used. The older versions of the videos where I seen them make little corona motors like the one that Ryan did in his. And the one with the neons, I think he was running them both with the Slayer Exciter, but the one with neon, I know he said he was running it with a Slayer Exciter. And that got me excited thinking about it because, you know, there's not a whole lot of voltage required to actually get that Slayer Exciter going. And one of these 10 stator motors, if you wanted to, you could probably feed off enough energy off of that one stator motor to actually run the doggone, because you're going to be putting out way more voltage than you're going to need. You could shoot off to a smaller capacitor bank off to the side and put enough energy in that thing to charge that thing real time. Because we're talking about a ludicrous amount of high voltage coming out. And when I do the spark gaps on my coils, you know, and I'm just picking up radiant energy on my Shaziz coil, it's not actually connected to anything, it just picks up off the coils. This thing takes a little while to charge up an 800 microfarad capacitor, but it will charge it completely up. And so, because I'm not getting as much voltage as you would be getting off of this particular device, you know, you could charge that capacitor bank up at an alarming rate with that amount of energy coming in. You see where I'm coming from?
Right.
So either way, I will draw up the best drawing that I can possibly draw up and get a diagram over to everybody. That way that you guys can check it out. Steve's trying to ask me a question here. Anyway, what do you say we take a quick music break?
Sure.
All right. Let me see if I can find something new to do. Hopefully, I won't get kicked to the curb while I'm doing this.
Uh-oh.
What?
Larry said he'll sing.
Uh-oh. Well, I done found a song here, so I'll...
Everyone take defensive positions.
Yeah. Right on, Mikko. That's funny. All right, I threw about 3 songs on there. So, everybody stay tuned. You're listening to the Mad Science Show.
Says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women, old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send
of the Broadway night, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and a carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Children, what's that sound?
operator. Give me the number for 911.
Yeah, that's 911. Hello, everybody. You're listening to Shaziz Mad Science here. We got Steve joined us in here. How you doing there, brother?
Bonjour.
Bonjour. Hey, how's your project going over there?
Fits and starts. Lots of issues to overcome, but I'll get there eventually.
But either way, you want to tell everybody what your project even is?
To build Asia's biggest fish farming empire.
Yeah, you're going to be growing tilapia?
Well, that's the general plan. Lots of people in the third world don't have the knowledge and technology to be able to feed themselves. You know, it's just this information that isn't available to them. So I'm working on a couple of projects in various places where I want to go and build them and just let people run it themselves. You know, give them the information, give them the actual infrastructure, and then it's entirely up to them.
Yeah. Well, that's...
I mean, obviously I'll be supporting them with information and stuff like that, but I can't spend long periods of time in other countries, so I'm pretty much based in Singapore. So if I get a visa to go and visit somewhere, it'll be a month at most. So I can't spend 9 months for a fish.
Well, if we can get the coil done for the boat that I was talking about, the full-scaled-up version of the Pop-Pop boat, then I'm sure that could benefit over there as well. What do you think?
I think there's a lot of people working very hard and a lot of very different ideas. And sooner or later, one of them's going to come to fruition. And for me, I mean, I love the mad science. I love the technology, but I don't have a workshop anymore. I don't have any tools. I've got four screwdrivers and a soldier knife.
Well, we may have to start shipping your tools then.
I've got nowhere to put them.
Put them in your pocket.
I'm living in a tiny little apartment, and I know how to build the aquaponics system, so that's my budget.
Build you a backpack.
You don't worry too much about.
Get you a backpack and put about 70-80 pounds worth of tools in the back of it.
Well, I'm heading back to Ireland for a couple of weeks in about a week's time, so I'll pick up a lot of the stuff that I left there and bring it back over with me, so I won't be completely without tools and toys and technology, but what I can have is going to be significantly limited, literally due to space.
Yeah.
But I mean, what I am doing, I was chatting with Larry last night till the cows came home, went to bed, got up in the morning and went back out to the field again. So it was a bit of a long conversation, but I'm going to have a little fiddle with the lightning rod around the apartment because we're on the roof here.
Cool.
And that should be interesting to see if I can get some bolts out of that.
Well, I've been watching a lot of people with the atmospheric experiments and they've been doing pretty good with it. Brian put a video out here recently where he sent a wire up on some balloons like cultists tried to do before, but unfortunately for cultists that day it was pretty windy, and so he didn't succeed very well in it. But there's definitely energy in the atmosphere, and so with that,
I want to have a look at the timing on that video. He didn't do that just a little bit ago. That's actually been out for a while.
Oh.
He showed that too, yeah. Unless he's put another one up, he's got one that's like just, you know, I don't know, a year or so old.
I thought he put one up here recently. I'm pretty sure I watched one, but who knows.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, I was pretty impressed.
One of the questions I wanted to throw out to you guys was, I mean, myself and Larry were talking about the rolling cord. And I was looking at one of Russ's experiments where he was getting 300,000 RPM off of all bearings.
Right.
Now, if you can stick... I mean, do you remember the armature device that you showed us a while back? Is it a couple
yeah.
of years ago now?
Yeah.
What's the chances of instead of putting a ball bearing in there, you stick a rod in, which will spin into brushes and try and create some AC electricity that way?
Well, I think it's highly possible because what essentially the rodent coil does, it pushes the field inward and actually makes like a vortex in the center of that field the way that it's designed up. Essentially, what's going on there it's the way that the coil is actually designed. It's like having multiple coils ran in series together. So you could probably get the same exact effect if you had... you know, like the secondary off of several, like let's say, let's just use 8 for an example. If you had 8 coils in a circle and you fired these things up the same way that you would do it, you know, like a DC pulse current or whatever, and then you had your bearing or your neodymium magnet inside of a glass cup, you would get the same effect, because like I was talking about earlier, those fields will try to couple with each other. In the center of it, you'll get like a vortex effect going on. That's what actually causes that that field, that magnet, to spin like it does. And so if you're pulsing DC to each one of these in sequence as it's going around, using, let's say, what do they call those doggone things? Oh, I got them in my magnetic field tester. Doggone it. Oh, I hate it when that happens. You know what I'm talking about there, Thomas, the little devices that pick up the north or south field?
Hall effect sensor.
Yeah, Hall effect sensors. Thanks.
Yeah.
So if you had some Hall effect sensors to determine the north and south, and every time, like, say it hit south, it would pulse the coil. And so each coil would start pulsing one right after another as it was spinning around, switching the field off of the magnet from north to south, would spin around, and they would pulse in sequence. So once you pulse that, the opposite field, or the positive fields, to like fields are going to want to repel each other, and it'll get that doggone magnet spinning at a ludicrous speed, because, you know, every time it flips from the next field, it's going to be pulsing the next coil. And the faster that gets going, the faster those Hall effect sensors are going to be pulsing those coils until you get to the point where that thing's just like flying up off the table.
You get what I mean, though, by the armature device, where you were turning the, like, the basically drive shaft of the drill.
Yeah, those manually. Those armatures are actually, that's how they actually get the doggone armatures, because they'll energize a set of those brushes that are charging up those coils in that armature, which are creating a magnet. And so,
One of the questions that I've got, and the problem that I was theoretically thinking about, is it's okay for a ball bearing because it's round, but when you've got a pole that's going to need to be able to stick up above and below it, how are you going to stop the wobble on it?
You mean from the centrifugal force, or what?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you've got a small round ball bearing in the center of that magnetic field, because it's round, you know, it's only going to spin in certain directions and shapes. If you have a longer rod, it's going to wobble. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think I understand what you're saying. Well,
so if you've got brushes at either one end or the other, or both ends, how do you manage to balance that pole at high revolution so it's not going to wobble and end up crashing everything?
Well, that's where the bearings come into place. The bearings are exactly what holds it into place.
But you're supposed
to
have
magnetic bearing will hold it into place.
Yeah, if you got a good strong enough magnetic bearing where you actually have frictionless bearings is what they've been calling those. But yeah, that could actually do it as well.
You get enough centrifugal force, though, and you're forcing it not to deviate, then what will end up happening is that whatever the heaviest part of it is will end up basically just breaking down and flying off of it.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I might be barking up the wrong tree here, but I'm just trying to find some way to get something working.
Well, I think that the bearings is going to be your best bet. Even though you are going to get some sort of drag with the bearings, I think we can overcome that drag. And
right.
Maybe nylon bearings would be actually better, because, you know, with regular bearings, you're talking about they got steel bearings in them. But if you had some nylon bearings, then you wouldn't have to worry about that. You know, use some sort of really good lubricant in the actual bearings itself. Nothing that's going to, freeze up or anything like that. You know, like some gun oil or something like that. And you could keep those bearings from wearing out. They actually got a certain material, like they make cutting boards out of, that is almost self-lubricating. So if you designed a set of bearings that were made out of some really good nylon, I could see those things lasting and not actually picking up a field. If you visualize what I'm talking about, if you take a magnet and you stick it on a regular bearing set, that you can feel literally when you try to spin that bearing, there's a drag on it, you know. And sometimes if this magnet's strong enough, it'll come to a dead stop.
Alternatively, what you could do is just not have any bearings at all and have three coils, a 12-inch rod, one at one end, one at the other, one in the middle, and then put your brushes in between the two for generating your electricity.
Yeah,
but then everything is going to be held in a magnetic field with nothing touching it.
But also at that same sense, since we're trying to cut down on the energy that actually is that we're using to run it, you're going to have some energy to keep that field going on the end of those bearings. So there's going to be an extra drain off there. That's why I was talking about using the, unless you did it like they do with the permanent magnets, you know, which I don't know how stable those fields would be, but if they were forced in there good enough and had strong enough magnets, I could see there's a potential there. But with,
I've just got so many ideas, it's great fun.
Well, that's what it's all about. That's why we love mad science, you know, sitting around troubleshooting and coming up with new ideas. But like I was saying earlier, I truly believe that I got a device figured out that will function and be able to be proven within a month's time if we could actually get together and put this thing together.
So what do you need?
Well, if we're going to make a large scale of it, then we're going to need some of those stator motors, and I'd like to try to get 10 of those stator motors because the voltage that would be coming off of them things would be flat out ludicrous. Now we could actually build these. Muddy has the capability; he knows how to build them actual flux wind turbines. But what we want is high voltage out of it. We don't want any of the, you know, current watts and amps for your conventional. The higher the voltage, the better. This is what we're looking to do for this particular device. And you don't have to worry about the cogging effect because you're not actually going to have a direct connection. Everything's going to be done, you know, anytime there's a coupling, like to charge the capacitor bank, it's going to be done through a spark gap. And so there won't be no direct connection for the electrons to be able to flow back in the opposite direction, and you'll actually be draining the energy off the capacitors before it gets up to the point where it's going to want to actually discharge back through the spark gap, which is possible because I've done it before. If I'm not using the energy off these 800 microfarad capacitors on my Chassez coil, after a certain point, they will start to spark back and put energy back into that deck off of there. And so if we're draining that energy off for a load, you know, whether it be a light bulb or a motor on the opposite side, then we can keep it at a level to where the capacitors are still getting fully charged, but not charged enough to actually make that leap back across the gap. You see where I'm coming from? Nobody? Maybe. So therefore, you don't get no back EMF. I call it a secondary electromagnetic field, all right, which is against the grain as far as the way people explain modern electricity and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, what happens is if you got a generator, and once you fire that generator up, whether you're using a gasoline engine or another electric motor to turn that generator, as long as it's not under load, the generator will spin freely, no problem, and it'll produce the energy. When you put it under a load, those electrons make a completed path from the circuit all the way back into the same coils that are being used to generate the energy that is going out. Once that energy gets back inside there, it starts to build up a surplus of electrons bouncing around in there, which creates a second electromagnetic field that they call back EMF that in turn will turn around and start to act like a brake on the armature and start to slow the armature down. Thus forth, you know, they say you can't get free energy because, you know, once you put it under a load, it bogs it down. Well, if you was instead of putting that energy into your load, if you excuse me, if you went through a spark gap before you went into that load, then that energy could be used on the opposite side, but the electron wouldn't be able to go back into the generator and make the completed circuit. It's actually a complete circuit, but it's not in the same...
You're just taking it outside the coil.
Yeah. It's not in the sense as a direct connection. See, there's the problem. If you're jumping across the spark gap, unless the capacitor bank gets charged up high enough that it can actually make that leap backwards, then you ain't got a problem. But if you're using that energy on demand as you're firing the energy across the spark gap into the capacitor, charging that capacitor, then you don't get the back EMF. Your generator won't bog down. You see what I'm saying now? It's that direct connection that it couples back into the same coils that you're using to generate the power are getting basically a second field built up in there, because those electrons are making a return path back into the same coil of wire that you're using to generate with. That's what causes the back EMF problem. Don't everybody jump to the mic at once.
I've said enough stupid things for one night.
Let's jump to the mic without any actual ideas. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Just start blathering.
You're exactly right. If you capture that back EMF through the spark gap, you can reuse it. Put it back into a capacitor. Let that capacitor provide you with a constant voltage.
Well, see, what I'm talking about, though, is not... What I'm talking about, though, is not even creating the back EMF to begin with. What I'm talking about is, you can see this even on just a regular 12-volt DC system. If you real slowly start moving your terminal towards that positive pole or negative pole, whichever one, if you already got the other one connected, if you real slowly move that, before you actually make that connection, you'll see a little arc across there, because that DC current will actually jump across that gap and hit that wire before you actually get it touched on there. And so there is energy transfer happening before it's actually connected. And so with that said, if you're using the same concept, you got a really tiny spark gap and you're actually jumping across that spark gap to send that energy into that capacitor bank, when you flip your load on, as long as it's not... as long as the capacitor bank doesn't have enough time to fill completely up to where it actually has enough energy to leap back the other direction, then you won't get no back EMF. All you're doing is using the energy that's coming out of that to jump across the gap, charge a capacitor, and then run your load.
There's actually a path for you promoting that spark, because most motors, they try to suppress that because it's basically wasted energy, and this patent was basically, you know, to design, or the device itself was designed to basically promote that spark,
yeah,
within a field of water vapor, so that you could basically generate a ton of hydrogen off of it.
Well, see, there'd be another plus right there. As long as you don't make it conductive enough that it will allow those electrons to actually complete a complete circuit around through there, then you won't have to worry about that back EMF. Even if it's only slightly conductive, you won't get enough back EMF to make the difference. See, where an electric motor gets hot or an electric generator head gets hot is when that return path comes back there. When you turn that load on, you're getting a surplus of electrons trying to get moving. You know, they want to go somewhere. They can't go nowhere. And they're waiting in line, and so as they're bouncing off of each other, they're creating friction, which in turn creates heat, which in turn runs the coating on your wire, and then eventually destroys the electric motor or the generator, because now the wires are shortened across. And, you know, if you take so many turns to create the energy that you need, those wires have to be coated so that they're insulated away from each other, so they're not shorting out. Well, that's where the electric motor goes bad, is whenever that insulation gets ruined. It gets burned off because of excess heat. That excess heat comes from the backload of too much electrons trying to make it down through the path. All you have to do, you don't even have to do it at a fast rate. All you have to do is get that electron to change places with the next one in line. And it doesn't have to happen fast. The energy release from that one electron getting ready to bump into the next one to knock it off the atom on the way down to the next line is what puts the energy that we call electricity in your system there. When you get it backed up, you know, pressure built up inside there, and those electrons are sitting there beating each other to death trying to get, you know, just like people, imagine 1,000 people standing in line and everybody's shoving each other forward, you know, I want to go, hurry up, you know, that kind of deal. You get some friction and then you got to fight. Well, the same thing inside electricity. When those electrons are trying to trade places with each other, they're trying to get the one in front of them going, you know, come on, let's go. And then it creates enough heat that it actually eventually to you'll see it in like I don't know what every electric motor was, but one of them I remember they run around about 60 hertz. Does that sound right? Nobody?
60 hertz AC, yeah, that's pretty much all the standard stuff we have.
Yeah. So that frequency wave that's going through there, anything higher than that will burn it up, and that's because you're getting more pressure built behind there, which in turn is creating the heat that is actually destroying the coating on the wire. So the way that we do electricity today is we literally use brute force with a magnetic field to shake that extra electron off of the copper atom and send it on down the line to the next one to bump it off. And so we're pushing more electrons faster than we need to be pushing them. When you get it past 60 hertz, now you got it to the extreme to where instead of the motor actually just getting warm, now it's getting freaking hot because you're forcing those electrons to bump into each other to send the next one on down the line too fast. You see what I'm saying?
Voltage actually is the higher the voltage, the more of that brute force you have.
Yeah. So the way that
look at the late.
Go ahead, Steve.
I was just going to say to this: the access to resources. A lot of the modern flat screen TVs run at 200 and 400 hertz. Now there must be components that you can whip out of them that have been discarded that you could use.
Oh, I'm sure there is, but they've obviously figured out that. You can do this at a faster rate without creating as much heat. Now,
they have all this worked out in your computer that you're running right now. I mean, what's the speed that processor is running at?
Yeah, and so when you talk about speed, when you talk about speed of a processor, you're also talking about how fast those electrons can actually move through there, because that's literally what causes the energy to go through there. You got semiconductors, transistors, and stuff like that switching on and off.
Flipping. Right.
Yeah.
Switching on and off, switching back and forth.
So now, if you could do the same work without moving those just to the right, to the brim of the how much energy that it takes to move that electron over to the next one, you know. The computers are built for speed, you know. The faster you can process this information, the better. So you're obviously going to need things like heat sinks to keep certain things cool in there, because you're cramming that energy through as fast as you humanly possible do it, you know. But that's where the heat comes in. If you could just, with any electric motor, get it to right to the bare minimum of what it takes to actually move that electron, it don't matter how fast that electron's moving. It only matters that electron comes in contact or gets close enough that the field can interact with the other field off the other electron and get that electron to move to the next one. That energy released off of one single electron is amazing. And so if you can do this at the right frequency, you just stimulate the frequency just enough to get that to flick it off to the next one. That's all you need. And then if that energy, whenever you're coming out of your generator, instead of making a direct connection to where those electrons can make a completed path all the way back, you will not get the back EMF, and you will not get the heat, because it will literally be jumping across, and there will be some energy lost as you jump across that gap. But like you was talking about earlier, you could actually recapture that energy from the spark gap itself. This is why I like the plasma tubes or the argon-filled tubes, is because you energize that that energy inside, or you energize that gas into the plasma state, and then you start actually building up pressure inside that tube, which isn't going to allow the electrons to go back in the other direction either way. So now you still don't have to worry about the back EMF, but you can drain or keep from wasting any energy on that tube. You can drain off of that tube as far as that goes. I mean, it flies in the face of all the conventional laws of physics, which I love it, but I'm telling you, I see this thing in my head. I know we can build it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. I've seen what the Wimshurst can do. I've seen what the Van de Graaff can do. I've seen what the Corona motors can do. I know what plasma is capable of doing. And all these things in conjunction with each other, with little bits and pieces of the puzzle that we get from other things, we can actually ground this to the Earth using Tesla's secondary, the way that the secondary on the Tesla coil works, and actually even draw even more energy in there, making that field even stronger. And so as long as you have that radiant energy coming off of those those coils, then you have more than enough energy to create a corona effect, that when that is arcing across to the nearest point, which would be the flywheels themselves, each one of the aluminum discs, it will energize those discs, send that energy down in through argon-filled tubes, and then that energy will go out from them argon-filled tubes to basically like propellers that are aimed off in opposite directions all the way around, and you will get that corona motor effect. You see what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I sort of get the vague point of it.
Well, like I said, I'm going to draw up a diagram, and once you see this diagram, you'll understand exactly what I'm talking about. But in the meantime, if you check out that video link that posted in there where that guy has done the one with the neon bulbs, that's the one you want to look at. Because he's getting some serious RPMs out of that thing. I mean, I wish he would put a meter on there and actually see how many RPMs he's getting out of it. I've seen a lot of Corona motors, but they don't really spin that fast, and when they get up to a certain point, they kind of level out. But his seemed like it just kept on, you know, building up speed. I don't know how much energy he was actually putting in there, but out of one of them, he said he was using a Slayer exciter at 12 volts. Mm. But this
what
guy.
Would you do with,
go ahead.
What would you do with a 50 foot high gram?
A what?
If you had a rod that went 50 foot up into the air.
Well, I'd basically use that energy to store into a capacitor bank and shoot that energy off into some coils and do exactly what we're talking about here. You know, that's what the atmospheric motor essentially is doing that Cultus is working on. You know, they have a the atmospheric group. If you have to get hold of Cultus for the actual link, I think I bookmarked it somewhere, but I don't have it handy. They got.
I've got it. I've been looking at it.
Well, they got.
My problem is I'm on the fifth floor of a building in an area with high electrical storm, and if I can hook up to the lightning rod that's on the roof of my building, I'm sure I can pull something off of that.
Well, I'm positive you could too.
But the problem is how do I do it without ending up killing myself?
Well, one, I would say you would have to have a ground wire going all the way down to the actual ground itself. That way, if it did get hit by lightning, the majority of the energy is going to shoot straight down that line.
That's what the lightning rod is for.
Well, they're actually supposed to discharge the electrons before you actually get a lightning strike. It's basically creating the path to the ground.
Yeah.
That the lightning bolt is actually forming in the air whenever it forms a lightning bolt. So that way, it keeps it from basically having to use the air to pass to the ground, and you get to safely control.
If I have to hook up to that, I mean, it's like an aluminium. Strip about, I don't know, maybe 2 inches wide and about a quarter of an inch thick, that goes all the way around the roof. Now, if I hook myself up to that, I can put energy off it. But, I mean, am I causing myself a point of a failure if there is a lightning strike? That's the serious question.
Right.
How do you do that safely? I mean, that's
what I would say. You just need to build your equipment so that it can handle a lightning strike. Whether it you know, keeps working or not, just make sure it's not going to cause any serious injury whenever it fails. And it still provides that path, you know, so...
I mean, it's all cement block and marble tile, so, I mean, there's nothing really there that's going to burn. It might glaze, or it might burn holes in the tile, but there's nothing there that's
going to burn. Right, to get work out of it, you're going to have to create a gap between it and the ground. But by doing that, basically, all you're going to be doing is you're going to basically create like a spark gap, so it's going to jump across that gap and then into the rest of the ground. It goes on into the ground and dissipates into the ground. It's not going to, like, suddenly decide to, you know, go cockeyed and run all through your house, because electricity always takes the shortest and the easiest path that it can take.
Yeah.
So if there's a ground within, like, an inch of that point where you basically broke that connection for that lightning to jump back into that other, or the rest of that rod and go on into the ground, it's going to do that rather than wandering off into the air.
Yeah, and so if you use a thin wire, like a low amperage wire, a fuse in between that ground rod and whatever it is that you're going to do, if the energy gets above that little wire, it'll burn that fuse out before it ever even goes in any farther. And like those surge protectors that you got for your computers, those are set up so that if the amperage gets too high or there's sudden surge, that it'll kick it off and protect your devices. Most of the time they work, but I don't trust them very much. Anyway, that's because of the way they're made cheaply. But I keep saying this all the time. I'm a firm believer that you don't need current watts and amps right out of the gate. All you need is high voltage. And you can convert that high voltage into usable current using things like capacitor banks. And so with the capacitor technology that we've got these days that can charge and discharge at a rapid rate, you can actually get real-time energy. That atmospheric group, they've got two 200-foot poles up in the air, and strung across those 200-foot poles is some wire that is coated with graphene, nanocoats of graphenes that have that they're picking up like a couple thousand volts out of the air. And then they're putting it down in through huge capacitor banks, and they're ending up at the other end with 9,000 volts to work with. That's a lot of power.
I don't currently have a multimeter, but when the air stand up on the arm, it comes to its side.
Yep. Either way, you know, like I said, we're floating in energy. And it's super easy to create high voltage. I mean, you can rub your feet on the carpet and go touch your brother on the ear and zap the crap out of him. He feels it, because that's a lot of power. So if you can get that much off a piece of carpet, and that's the way the Van de Graaff generator works, is, you know, basically running a belt across either a nylon or a glass tube or something like that, and building up electrons until it finally jumps across to the top load on that thing, and then across to your finger or whatever you put in front of it. And I kind of underestimated the Van de Graaff, because Cultus left his over here until he gets back. And that doggone thing, I didn't touch it for a while, and I was like, man, this thing don't seem to be working. And I got my hand probably about 6 or 8 inches away from that thing, and that thing literally jumped across there and zapped the you-know-what out of me. So
I was going to say, actually, something that apparently a lot of people don't understand, and until I got into this and started reading up on it recently, I didn't really know it either, is that, and that's that, you know, the static generators that you guys are talking about, like the Wilmhurst and the Van de Graaff, it's not the rubbing action that actually creates it. If you press something up against another something and pull it away, you get a static charge that builds up off of that. The rubbing is just creating a series of press down, lift off, press down, lift off, press down, lift off.
Okay, that makes sense.
So I can give you a link, actually, for all the properties and whatnot.
But either way, even though that right at the, out of the gate doesn't seem like you could actually run anything off of there, it's because you're not thinking about, you know, letting that energy jump across the spark gap, charge up a capacitor, and if you can keep that high voltage coming in at a quick enough rate, then you can literally charge that capacitor up super fast. And you can get real-time energy out of that thing. I mean, you could make a capacitor bank, a huge capacitor bank that would store a massive amount of energy. And so with these stator motors that I'm talking about, I wished I had a link to that doggone video where that guy had it hooked up to the gasoline engine. I mean, he had an arc coming off of there that would have killed you, literally. That's a, you can tell the difference between one that's just going to hurt like heck and one that's going to kill you. This was a bright, you could have welded with this thing. And
right, it's breaking down the air.
Yeah, and so that's telling me there's a whole lot of power going on there. Now, if you got 10 of these,
You're running a gasoline engine, though, you're running a lot of really condensed energy over time. That gasoline holds an awful lot of power in it, so.
Yeah, but see, you don't even need the gasoline engine portion of it. That's what I'm saying. You don't even need, all you need to do is get that thing spinning. Even at a slow speed, you're still going to be producing high voltage. And depending on how far across your gap is, it will depend on how fast it arcs across there. Right now, I got a little electric fence charger. It's a 4.5 volt electric fence charger. It's solar powered. The sun charges it up, and then I got it coming through a couple little neon bulb starters that I keep talking about with argon in there. And those I'm using as my spark gap, and then I have a second spark gap after that. And these two will set there, and they will arc across every time the energy in that. Every time that fence charger pulses, it will arc across. Now you can imagine if I turn the speed of that one pulse up instead of waiting so long for it to pulse, I have it pulsing faster. I can charge my capacitor bank up there even faster. The faster I got that energy coming in where it can actually leap across that gap will be determined how fast I can charge that capacitor up. You see what I'm talking about?
I'm wondering if the modified Wilmhurst generator that I was talking to Cultus about building might be useful for that. Because, I mean, what he had basically just had two wheels on it, two discs.
Yeah, imagine it with 10 wheels on there.
Well, I was going to say, there's nothing to stop you from putting 10 discs in series and having the positive on one side, positive material on one side, negative material on the other side, and just linking that together across it so that you get a series all the way through.
Yeah, and you could have your probes all arcing across to rails, like two separate rails. And every time it hits that rail, it's going to send energy down the line. And so if you got, like, the 10, they're all firing one right after another, you know, pop, 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 all the way down the line, hitting that rail, that energy would transfer down that rail, jump across the spark gap, and charge up a capacitor bank at an alarming rate.
Right. Well, that's why I said, that's why I passed and posted that link in there, because there's a whole lot of information in there that you don't normally find when you go even, Colta sent me a link. It was just like an image that had, you know, basically like a series of different triboelectric, you know, it was a triboelectric table that basically showed the different, I guess, in relation to each other, the different positive and negative facts. And even Wikipedia's list is more comprehensive than that. So,
well, I'm interested in looking into it. And when you talk about the Wilmhurst and stuff, I'm actually thinking that to some extent, the Wilmhurst would probably be the best go as far as building the device that I'm talking about. But I'm thinking, for the meantime, I want to start off with those stator motors, because if I can defy the back EMF, the cogging effect, so to speak, then I think that right there would do just as good as the Wilmhurst, if not better, even though you're still using magnetic magnets to actually shake that electron off. You see what I'm talking about? I like the Whims hers because you wouldn't have that. You wouldn't even have the capability of back EMF on that.
Right. Well, my thought for the generator was to you use the different materials against each other on each side of the discs.
Yeah.
And use there's I mean you have conductive and non-conductive materials to work with. Okay. Like polyurethane foam, it's not very good as a conductor, but it's like got the highest positive rating when it comes to the triboelectric effect. And you can use like aluminum and lead are both positive triboelectric materials, but they're also conductive too. So if we make a nanomaterial out of that, a little layer can be painted in there, like kind of the way the little traces are on a solar cell.
Yeah.
To drain that power in the direction that you want it to go, so that you can continue that down the chain. Because, like I said, my idea was basically to run it from one side to the core, across the core, then up across from the core, across the other side, and across the edge of the disc to the from the positive side of the disc to the negative side of the disc, and then back down to the core, and just keep doing that in series until you get to the end of that, you know, however many discs you've got. I mean, you could have any number you want.
Yeah, and if you run them horizontal and do it just right, and use the flywheel thing that I was talking about earlier, you could get that sucker to be so efficient. I'm telling you, man, I know this will work. Using everything from bits and pieces to all of it, yeah, actually using gravity itself to assist the turning of it. Once you get up to a certain speed, those weights they have built up energy and will, you know, help drag that thing around. And so I think you could actually get a coronal motor or the plasma motor, whatever you want to call it. I actually believe that you could get this thing to produce a lot of torque.
Right. You could probably use a ratchet and pawl system or something like that that basically lets it spin freely one direction, but the other direction it'll catch and actually force it to spin.
Yeah.
So like if you're running it off a windmill generator and you've got weight on that thing and pulleys to keep it get it spinning at a really high speed. It should spin for quite a while when the wind does die down before it finally shuts down. So,
well,
if you don't have long breaks between gusts of wind, then you know it'll be spinning continuously the whole time.
Well, and then there's also the potential of actually incorporating solar as well to maintain it even when the wind's gone. And there's so many different things that you could actually put in there, all of these pieces of the puzzle into the same device, that no matter whether it was raining outside or windy or sunny or whatever, that you would always have energy going into this device that would keep this thing going. And
right. Well, the other thing too is that airflow between those discs is going to generate power. So I mean, if you step it up from just like the 10 discs to maybe making a couple thousand sheets and stacking them, so there's just like a few millimeters of distance between each one of them, and set that out in the air, so that airflow moving around outside is pushed through those. I'm sure you'd get plenty of static out of that too.
Yeah, and any
without having to be high off the ground.
Any waste wind off there, using something I figured out from the Tesla turbine, that you could actually divert that waste wind to literally make a loop right back around and fire it in between those discs. That would actually get it to assist it as well. So there's nothing to lose there. Anyway, we're down to the last 5 minutes, so anybody got any last thoughts on this whole deal? I mean, I'm going to build it. If I got to do it myself, I'm going to build it, no matter what, because I got the whole diagram inside my head. I'm going to sit down after the show, and I'm going to draw this out real good and try to get everybody a copy of it so we can troubleshoot it together and build it. I mean, it can be done on a small scale and proven. Once it's proven on a small scale, then we can go see where we want to go from there. But I told everybody, you give me as much high voltage as you want. With no amps, no current, no watts or anything like that, just as high voltage as you got, and I'll give you a lightning bolt. I'm serious, man. Because, you know, what I've seen with Tesla technology, how the actual Tesla coil works, I understand it 100%. And what I've seen, the power potentials of a Tesla coil, you know, I know that, you know, our conventional electrical system isn't, we're Stone Age. What we should be doing right now, you know, as opposed to what they were doing back then, and the fact that the mercury arc rectifier was back in the 1800s, and that was more high tech than our nuclear reactors, man. I mean, you got in a nuclear reactor, you got decaying rods that are boiling water. That's it.
Right. Yeah, I was gonna say almost every form of technology that we have, as far as generating power goes, it's running off of boilers, you know.
Yeah.
Just boiling water. Coal-based electric generators are no... The actual electric generator itself, the mechanism that makes it spin, is no different than the same mechanism that's in your nuclear reactor, so...
Well, before we head out of here, I'll leave you with one last final thought. In conventional electricity, back EMF is the, and the lens effect is the thorn in the side of electrical appliances since they developed them the way they did. I'm kind of talking about using that back EMF, but in a different form, in the form of more like plasma and radiant energy, to where you're actually sending that energy back into it deliberately, but it's a different form of energy. You're not you're changing the form of energy into a high voltage, which in turn you're changing it into radiant energy, which then in turn fires through a disc that fires through some argon and creates a charge out the opposite side that is using like a negative ion generator or a coronal motor to actually create pressure, which in turn turns the wheel and gets it to spinning. So you want that waste energy to go back in this sense. So you're actually creating... It wouldn't be called a back EMF because it's a different type of electricity, but you're still getting the same work out of it. It's just not wasted. Does that make any sense to you?
Right. Well, keeping it from going back through the coil so that it doesn't create an additional magnetic field that's creating that cogging effect is definitely a plus.
Yeah.
There's still going to be a cogging effect, though, even as the wire is pushing through it. It's generating its own magnetic field and resisting it as it goes. I mean, you can see this effect in something as simple as taking a big plate of aluminum and dropping a magnet on it and then tipping the aluminum over to the side and watching it slide down off of the aluminum, because it will not slide as fast as you would think it would because of the fact that it's actually creating it. The aluminum is becoming magnetized as the magnet moves. Any little movement across the sheet of aluminum, it generates a reverse magnetic field against it.
But
so there's some there. If you've got electricity flowing through the coil on top of that, though, it makes it even worse.
But to overcome that, and we're going to run just a hair over, but to overcome that, that is where that star-shaped coil comes in, the Roden coil. That's that effect that you get from the Roden coil is essentially like putting like eight Tesla coils in a circle together. You're getting a vortex effect in the center of that as those fields are trying to couple with each other, and there's a disturbance in the middle. And so using that, I believe, is enough to overcome the field that you're talking about. You see what I'm saying? You're actually creating a vortex in the center of that with the motion of the deal going inside is actually disturbing those fields long enough to counteract that effect and actually assist it.
Has anybody done any work with the star coils and ferrofluids?
Well, I did, but we're right down to the 10 minutes, so we're actually over. So we'll save it all for the Knights of the Round Table if you guys want to join me tomorrow.
I should be around, so.
All right, well, with that said, great show, and thank you guys for everything. Larry, Thomas, Steve, appreciate everything, and Mitko. stay tuned for the Hope Show, the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow. If you got an opportunity to join in on that, we'd love to have you all there. And so
we'll have that happy hour too Sunday night, 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, where we're going to get together and have a second round robin. Since one show a week for Mad Science isn't enough, so
yeah. And I'm thinking about trying to go to a 7 day a week platform. I'm just trying to work out the bugs. But in the meantime, that happy hour, we'll get everybody links to that as well, and that way we can. I want to talk about this some more on that and try to have some diagrams ready to explain to people. How's that sound?
That'd be good to actually do that on the happy hour, because we have video, so you can actually hold things up and pass things.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Be on YouTube forever. No chance of basically blocking that one.
All right. Well, with that said, peace and love, everybody. Hope Show's coming up. It's a podcast repeat of last week's show, so if you missed it, then you get to hear it again. So everybody take care.
You hear me? You my creation! Fly! 21 gigawatts!
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.